the truth.
What golden kitchen rule are you breaking? 651-641-1071. This is the Colleen and Bradley Show on My Talk 1071, streaming live at mytalk1071.com. Everything entertainment. Colleen Lindstrom, Bradley Trainer.
Hi.
Hi. And why are we asking people that question?
Because, well, I read an article about butter and, you know, it just got me thinking about butter.
You sure know how to kick off a great conversation.
I love butter. Anyway, so I read this article about specifically whether or not leaving butter on the counter is a good idea. And I was like, what do you mean? Is it a good idea? I've been doing it my entire life. Nonetheless, we'll get to that.
And you haven't died yet.
Well, exactly. And we'll get to that in just a moment. But whether it's putting eggs on your counter, butter on the counter, or maybe you put your tomatoes, God forbid, in the fridge. Along with your apples. What? I'm like, everybody has a golden kitchen rule that they break, or at least somebody else's golden kitchen rule is broken, because people have very strong thoughts about what should and shouldn't be done. And in this case, a lot of the ones are, you know, refrigerator-based, so feel free to add to the list. 651-641-1071. Back to the butter. So there is this whole article in The Takeout about whether or not it's safe to leave butter unrefrigerated. And I was like, who said it was unsafe? So I went through and I'm like, because I just, truth be told, have put butter on the counter my entire life in a butter dish.
Because who wants to work so hard to spread their butter?
Yeah, like, and I know you can buy all these like clever devices to take butter out of the refrigerator and then put it on bread somehow quickly without having to keep it out on the on the counter. Nonetheless, the specific story is just like, you know, oh, some people think it's a bad idea because it's going to kill you or it's a health risk.
Again, you haven't died yet.
Yeah, no, I have been perfectly fine. And I've really never, to be quite honest with you, heard of anybody getting sick from butter they left out on their counter. Now, some people say it may not be as fresh for as long, but like if you're leaving butter out for months, then perhaps you just don't like butter. So you probably aren't going to be putting butter out, because whose stick of butter is sitting out that long? Like you're going to eat it. And if you're not, then you're probably...
Then you need to deal with your relationship with butter.
Which is fine. Like, if that's not your thing, by all means. But at the end of the day, the article does say, yeah, like, you're fine. Leave your butter out for a few days. It's okay. You're not going to get salmonella poisoning from your butter. Mostly because, by the way, pasteurized milk has basically had most of its nutrients, like, burned off anyway.
Right.
And salt, if your butter is salted, the amount of salt in it is going to preserve it. So, you know, again, you're fine.
You're fine.
You're
Calm
fine.
Down.
You're fine.
You're just
but
fine.
Some people get very, you know, up in their feelings about where the appropriate place for butter, much less other things, are in the refrigerator or not.
651-641-1071. What golden kitchen rule are you breaking? 651-641-1071. It's hard for me to answer this question because I think all my rules are right.
Yeah. But have you ever had anybody call you out on your rules? Like, you and your husband agreed on everything when it came to the kitchen?
I will say we did have to have a pretty good conversation about the syrup.
What's the conversation about the syrup?
You know, and I'm not talking about like real maple syrup. That's the good stuff. And that does go in the refrigerator.
It does?
I think it does. But like my log cabin, that can go right back into the cupboard.
If you put real maple syrup in the fridge, it's just going to crystallize.
Maybe you're right. I guess we don't get that very often.
But again, it's one of those things. There, people have these things where they're like, you just don't do this. Yeah. Like, I have a habit of putting a lot of things in the fridge that other people don't. Like, Jamie and I disagree on several things, and I've actually, like, lessened up a bit. I will put things in the fridge if I want them to stay longer. Things that you don't need to put in the fridge, like an apple, right? Like, you don't need to put apples in the fridge.
Right.
But sometimes I'm not going to get to all the apples in enough time before they're going to sit on the counter and go bad.
Right. So then you got to put them in the time machine.
At least that's my theory. I don't know if that's true. And again, half the time it's, you know, an old, to use an outdated term, wives' tale.
651-641-1071. What golden kitchen rule are you breaking? Holly, who do we have on the line?
Noelle.
Noelle, hello. What golden kitchen rule are you breaking, Noelle?
I routinely make a nice big pot of rice in my rice cooker and leave it on the counter for a couple days, and it's totally fine.
Okay, I'm so glad you brought this up, Noelle, because I just saw an article this morning about not reheating rice, period.
What?
Yes, okay. I know. It blew my mind,
what
too.
What do you mean not reheating
okay,
rice?
I got to look it up because I read it. Thank you, Noelle, for your call, by the way. I saw this headline in my my news app on my phone that said, you might be okay reheating rice if you follow these rules.
You might be okay.
Right? Okay, so I was like, wait a second. Hold the phone. Are you trying to tell me that you're not supposed to eat rice as leftovers? And yes, that was what the article was trying to tell me, was that you should, that there's some bacteria on that grows on rice specifically.
But wouldn't microwaving it kill it?
Yes, if you microwave it to the right temperature. So I think when you reheat it, it has to be reheated to 160 degrees Fahrenheit in order for any of that bacteria to die.
Weird.
I was,
to her point though, like I haven't left rice out for days at a time, but I have left things out a lot in my life and have been just fine. It doesn't mean you aren't gonna, like, there isn't a risk.
Right.
But I will also say that if there are microbes on your food in the refrigerator, they can be just as harmful. So whether your food is in the fridge or not, it can still make you sick. The only difference is that at a warmer temperature, those bacteria can multiply more quickly. But it's not that you are removing the chance for you to get bacteria.
You're just slowing it down.
By putting it in the refrigerator. It's just that it would not, you know, multiply as quickly.
Yeah. Holly, do we have any other callers?
No.
Okay, do you have any golden kitchen rules that you break?
Well, I grew up in a house where everything was refrigerated, and it was really weird, and I didn't realize that it was weird until I left the house.
Mm-hmm.
So then it's like, oh, I actually don't need to refrigerate all the things. It's quite liberating.
I will say, I grew up in a house like this too. I think it's because we lived in the South and everything's really hot, so like you just put it in the fridge because it'll stay better longer.
Mm-hmm.
But we put bread in the fridge.
Oh yeah.
Which, like, to this day I'm like, why were we putting bread in the fridge?
Yeah.
Also,
I will, if we think we're not going to get to it quickly enough.
Yeah,
you got a little bit of like mold on the cheese, just cut it off.
It's fine.
Yeah, you just got a little salt, just cut it off.
Just cut it off.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Eat around it. You're fine. Chill out. You're good.
It's fine.
Yeah, oils, vinegar. I mean, you know, I'm just trying to think of all the things you don't need to put in their fridge.
Oh, and then there are some things that the expiration dates are just suggestions.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, yeah. Again, like if there's not, I always say, because my partner will get frustrated if something expires and he's like, oh, why did you buy this? It's going to expire. And I'm like, okay, A, it's relative. It depends on what it is. Mm-hmm. Right. So just because the meat expires tomorrow doesn't mean we have to throw it away.
Mm-hmm.
It means that we need to use it quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And also, if it's meat, by the way, if it doesn't smell bad and you're cooking it to the right temperature.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like it's magically the switch is going to turn off and it's just going to rot right before your very eyes in 24 hours.
And walk away.
Yeah. Also, just throw it in the freezer.
That's a time machine. The freezer is a time machine.
Well,
it stops everything.
I was going to say, it's also just like, you know, a defense mechanism. Because, you know, if there's something, and also if it's meat and it's not ground, it's going to be on the surface. It's not going to be inside,
mm-hmm.
right? And you're going to cook the outside. So it's fine.
You're fine. When we come back, I almost threw out the phone number again. We don't need to hear from you. It's okay.
We're going to break.
Because we are going to talk about Christina Aguilera, of all people.
Who knew?
Who knew? When we come back on the Colleen and Bradley Show on My Talk 107.1. We have not talked about Christina Aguilera recently, and that's about to change on the Colleen and Bradley Show, My Talk 107.1, streaming live at mytalk1071.com. Everything Entertainment. Colleen Lindstrom, Bradley Trainer.
Hi.
And what's going on with Christina Aguilera, Bradley?
So she did this interview with Health Magazine. It's very healthy. And, you know, it's kind of a fluffy piece. It's Christina Aguilera in her own words. And it talks about some lighthearted stuff. But there are also some really good nuggets in there. And I think based on the conversations we've had since the Britney Spears documentary, Finding Britney Spears? It was called Finding Britney Spears, okay. Right?
I don't know why that doesn't feel right to me. Framing Britney Spears. Yeah, you were close.
I was on the right F word.
Yeah.
Or I was on the right letter.
You were on the F.
So anyway, based on those discussions and the conversations we've had since that documentary, this interview made me want to see a Christina Aguilera documentary. Maybe it's because, you know, we've had the Demi Lovato documentary. Right. We've had all these stars sharing their innermost thoughts with us. And I'm interested in the way that I'm interested in anybody's story. But specifically with Christina Aguilera, I think she inhabits a very particular role and did so at a very particular time in our cultural history as it pertains to female pop stars. And to that end, I'm just like, I would love to see a documentary, if not just about her, about sort of all of the women from like the 90s and the early 2000s right. who came up as pop stars. Because again, I think their experiences, I think Britney Spears' experience is probably shared by many in the field. And it would then tell us a lot about, us, right? Like, right. Just like any good story, you know, you'll find yourself in it. And I know a lot of people had that experience with Framing Britney Spears. So as I was reading through this health piece, I was like, oh, you know, she's got some stories to share.
Well, and the interesting thing that you just said is like they all came up in the same atmosphere and dealt with the same pressures. They just all, it sort of embodied itself differently in each of them.
Yeah.
And so what did Christina Aguilera have to say?
Well, in one particular part of the interview, she talks about the tabloids specifically. They just asked her, the tabloids definitely put you through the ringer. And she's like, yeah, so sometimes you forget how, and I'm reading her words verbatim, sometimes you forget how bad it was, because it was just the norm. I'm currently in Miami, and the other day I was outside with my daughter. I was thinking I was under the radar. Then I saw these pictures of us come out. I was really emotional about it because I've really tried to be more private. And this is part of a conversation that she has where she's been able to sort of just unplug for the last year. Mm. And she's like obsessing over how nice it is to be able to do that. She went on to say, I was really emotional about it because I've tried to be more private. My previous house was right on the street, and tour buses would drive by and treat you like a zoo animal and talk bleep about you. The guy in the microphone would literally read out whatever tabloid story there was right about me right in front of my son's bedroom.
That's so weird.
And she said, it's harassment and it's petrifying. Seeing those pictures took me right back there to that point. But then I was brought back to the message of, who am I living for? And the answer is me. So, you know, like, she's saying all the right things, but I'm like, no, let's go back to you can hear the tour buses drive by and talk bleep about you. Like, that's just such a unique perspective that we would have at the time, I guarantee, been like, well, yeah, that's the price of celebrity you signed up for, Christina. Mm-hmm. Make your millions. Like, and I don't think we're in that place anymore. I think we're having much more thoughtful, complicated conversations or perceptions about what that actually was like. And I think we're probably being somewhat more empathetic to, to experiences like that.
Well, and it's interesting, too, to think about, you know, like, how do we fit into that story, right? Mm-hmm. Because if I were on a trip right now, wouldn't that be nice? I'm sorry, I was just dreaming about vacations. Anyway, if I were in LA and TMZ rolled up next to me and was like, we're doing these tours of celebrities' houses, I'd be like, I totally want to do that. And I would feel super great about all of it, except for the part where they pulled up in front of the house and started shouting into the megaphone, stories about the person whose house you were looking at. Like, then they start to be zoo animals, and that's not what you... You just wanted to look at their real estate and feel like you were, you know,
yeah,
near where it happens. Right?
Absolutely. And I think we, you know, there's always going to be that component of being an audience, right? Like, you're always going to be somewhat of a zoo animal if you're Christina Aguilera. But I think the way we treat zoo animals has changed. Mm-hmm. And the same is true for pop stars, right? Like, when we go to a zoo today, we don't go through the zoo and expect from the zoo the same presentations that we used to. We're trying to be more like, this is an animal and it's a native habitat, and we're going to give it some. Yes,
we're
exactly.
We're trying to be humane. Right.
And the same is true with this industry. But back to my own curiosity, I'm like, you just know that Britney, Christina, I mean, all the way up to people like Katy Perry and beyond, and today like Demi Lovato, et cetera, like they occupied a very particular space in our culture that I think reflects about us as a culture.
Yeah, absolutely. I will say, and I wish I could remember what she said in it, but Christina Aguilera shows up in Demi Lovato's documentary as well. So to your point about wanting to see a Christina Aguilera documentary, yes, please. Thank you very much. Okay, that article is in Health Magazine.
Health.com.
When we come back on the Colleen and Bradley Show, celebrities behaving badly. We call them
D-bags.
We're going to tell you about them after this on My Talk 107.1. Celebrities behaving badly. We love to tell you about them on the Colleen and Bradley Show, My Talk 107.1, streaming live at mytalk1071.com. Everything Entertainment. Colleen Lindstrom, Bradley Trainer.
Hi.
And we have a name for them. That name is?
Bags of D.
Presenting Lord and Lady Douchebag of the Day.
Who's your douchebag today, Colleen?
Sharon Osbourne and all of her Instagram friends.
Well, let's give her one of these.
So yesterday we talked about it a little bit. Hello? Yesterday we talked about it a little bit. The Talk, the show that Sharon Osbourne left.
Yep.
Did a their first show back after mm-hmm. they took a hiatus to kind of deal with the dust up caused by the on air scuffle betwixt Sharon Osbourne and Cheryl Underwood. So Sharon Osbourne was not present for their first show back because
she left.
Well, she has quote broken her silence on Instagram by posting an Instagram message.
Oh, God.
You want to know what it was? It is a video of a large brown bear scratching their back on a pole. And the caption is Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Okay. Seemingly indicating that now she has all kinds of time on her hands.
She's a clown.
I think. I don't know. Anyway, that was just hours after the amazing first show back on The Talk, where they had a real conversation about racial issues, about trauma after having difficult conversations. And that's what Sharon Osbourne posted.
Yeah.
Which is just like kind of tone deaf and ridiculous, right? But then
petty,
yes, that's a good word for it. Then her commenters came out of the woodwork.
Oh, I'm sure.
Oh. One of them said, I flipped it on real quick, curious. And they're all saying they did nothing wrong. Oh, please. They so ganged up on you, Sharon. I'm never watching again. They're just like The View now.
You know what that is? That's a troll. Who is like trying to like, ooh, I'm going to, that's a pot stir. Oh. That's a pot stir and trolls, what that is.
Well, get your spoons out because they're all stirring the pot. I don't know if you're watching The Talk today, but you're getting completely railroaded. If they really wanted to make a difference and have an honest conversation, you should have been included. Sharon left, everybody. I want to remind you, Sharon opted out of the conversation.
Sharon very well could have been sitting on that stage with everyone. And yes. I know that there are people who would say, Well, that's just not fair. It wouldn't be fair to just, you know, have everybody sitting around and yelling at Sharon. Well, first of all, that's not what would happen. Second of all, that's not what actually happened. Mm-hmm. And third of all, that's a complete misunderstanding of what actually happened. And I can totally see, that doesn't mean I approve or understand, but I see how people will use something like what the talk did to further their own narrative. But that doesn't make it right. Mm-hmm. And because, again, I watched it with my own eyeballs, and Sharon would have been a better person as a result had she remained on the show and sat through that conversation. Yeah. Because nobody said anything negative about Sharon Osbourne other than reflecting her own actions.
And I would imagine that was very, I mean, that was intentional. Like, they had a conversation about that, about how they would portray Sharon in the conversation.
Yeah. And because I think they're adults and they're professionals, yeah, and they're not going to quote savage somebody's character for ratings. They literally went to great pains to talk about the fact that they bent over backwards on the at the original show, like when this all went down. To not, you know, I mean, these were people who were doing Sharon better than she deserved.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Sharon got more than she deserved from her coworkers. And that was true on the day this all went down. And it's true on the show after she left. Because they didn't owe her any of that. They did not owe her any professional courtesy. It was nice of them to afford her some professional courtesy. They didn't owe her that.
Mm-mm.
She would not owe... do you think she would return the favor?
Oh, goodness, no.
If somebody... here's the perfect proof. What did she talk about on her her interview with... Entertainment Tonight,
it's a real good show.
Oh, they're just gonna get rid of me. And like, she went after the show, she talked about how people threw her under the bus. She had no problem blaming and pointing fingers at her coworkers.
Mm-hmm.
She's the only one in the equation doing that,
right?
And now I'm pointing a finger at
which
her,
which should tell you a lot about her.
You see how this works, yeah, right? Because then you have all these trolls who show up and they're like, ooh, they're talking about you,
right,
Sharon.
Which is so funny, too. Can we just talk about Sharon Osbourne does not need Cindy from, you know, suburban Illinois to show up on her Instagram to be like, Sharon, I am watching the talk right now and they're talking about you.
Yeah.
Sharon Osbourne doesn't need that. But
Sharon,
thank you,
if Cindy. She wants that, she can turn on the TV.
Exactly. She doesn't need that from you. It's like,
it's the world, man.
People do better. Just do better.
But here's the good thing. You had all these people on one side who did better.
Yeah.
Despite this one woman's crap behavior.
Yeah. Let's glass half full that.
Yeah.
I'm here for it. Thank you. Thank you for that. Okay. Now back to D-bags.
Yay! D-bags!
Who's your D-bag?
My D-bag today is people, all of you.
I thought we just did that.
No, kind of. But so, and I don't mean People Magazine. I mean the story in Cosmo about people, because we just can't have nice things. Here's the headline from Cosmo. And that's Cosmopolitan for those of you under age of 35.
Oh, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Jennifer Aniston's rep denied reports that she's in the process of adopting a child. European tabloids reported that Jen revealed the news during the Friends reunion.
Oh, for goodness sake.
It's no secret Jennifer is beyond accomplished. She starred in over 44 movies to date, literally has her own production company, and of course has become an icon for playing Rachel Green in Friends. But despite her many accomplishments, many are unfortunately still preoccupied with the fact that she does not have a child. Mm-hmm. There was a time when I was like, Jennifer Aniston, you're a celebrity. It's what you signed up for.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think people are going to talk about? Mm-hmm. You're getting tongues to wag because you know how tabloids operate, blah, blah, blah. But at what point are we just going to let this woman not have children?
Or, like, yes, it's... At what point are we ever going to stop the poor Jennifer Aniston storyline?
Poor Jennifer.
It's so
poor childless,
tired and
marriedless.
It's so lazy. Like, let the woman live her dang life.
And I do think that she probably from a, you know, and rightly so, when, you know, if, like, what's the phrase? If you can't beat them, join them. Like, I'm sure she has figured out how to manipulate the media to her own ends. And that's fine. But I'm just here to talk about the people who, like, continue this narrative. The woman hasn't. Like, when was the last time she was a household name because of what she was actively doing in the moment?
Friends.
Okay. And that was what years exactly?
Back then.
Right?
The 90s.
Early 2000s, late 90s, yeah, early 2000s. Early
but I will say she did start to get headlines again around the morning show, which is the great Apple TV show.
Yeah.
But even so, those were peppered in between stories about her friendship with Brad Pitt,
yeah,
her ex,
and
her divorce from Justin Theroux and her dried up fallopian tubes.
Yeah, and I'm not saying she hasn't done anything since Friends. It's just that, like, then I can understand that the world is like, because we do this every day, we're constantly talking about Kardashians,
mm-hmm,
right? Because they're in the moment and it's wrong and there's a lot of troubling narratives and all that stuff and they're manipulating the media too. But, like, Jennifer Aniston is not one of those people any longer.
Right.
You know, we still talk about her because she's sort of this, like, dynastic figure. She's like this royal family celebrity member,
mm-hmm,
but, like, still she opens a tabloid today and if her name appears, you can bet bed knobs to broomsticks or whatever the phrase is that she is probably going to see a story about her dried up fallopian tube.
Right. And by the way, I do just want to say, when we say that, we're not, that's not us saying it.
No, that's
the tabloids saying,
and that's
it.
Why I'm saying people are horrible, because yes, this poor woman. And I know she's not poor. She's very wealthy and covered in a vino.
But in this, so, you know, the rest of her body isn't dried up is all you're trying to say.
Yeah. She needs to get some Aveeno for them tubes.
Honest to goodness, though, it is so frustrating for that to be the thing that all the stories about Jennifer Aniston will boil down to in some way, shape or form.
Yeah.
That is an insult to her as an actress and as a human being.
I bet if you went to the street and said, tell me three things about Jennifer Aniston, the average person, one of them inevitably, mm-hmm, would be, she doesn't have kids, or she's not with, she never got married to, you know, like, there, it's just going to be about her status as a woman.
Right.
In society's concept of what a woman should be.
Right.
And that's, you know, married and with a child. It's 2021.
Yeah, we can do better. We should just rename this segment.
Do better.
You can do better.
Yeah.
Right? Just do better.
Celebrities
do better.
Colon.
Do better.
And in this case,
celebrities
not
colon do better needs work.
So do celebrity colons.
Yeah.
But in this case, it's not even the celebrities.
Mm-hmm.
It's all y'all.
Mm-hmm.
Not listeners of the Colleen and Bradley show, because you're a refined audience.
Mm.
With very refined taste.
Who loves a good fart joke? There we go.
Right.
When we come back on the Colleen and Bradley show, there is an update to one of our favorite Netflix shows of yore, Making a Murderer.
Dun, dun, dun.
We will tell you what that update is after this on My Talk 107.1. Thank you, Holly. This is the Colleen and Bradley show on My Talk 107.1, streaming live at mytalk1071.com. Everything entertainment. Colleen Lindstrom, Bradley Trainer.
Hi.
Hey, how's it going?
You know,
we've got a little update about a very popular Netflix show, Making a Murderer.
We do. Can we get the Cobra Gang together?
Ooh, kids? Let's do it.
Whenever there's trouble, we're there on the double. We're the Cobra Gang. If you've got the crime, we've got the time. We're the Cobra Gang.
Now, I've brought us all together not to solve a mystery, but to hear about a mystery that's being solved. And it's a true crime story that we have, as you said, paid attention to. Gosh, how many years ago was that documentary now?
I mean,
Making a Murderer, 2015.
Time is irrelevant, but yes.
7 years. Oh,
wow,
no.
It's been a minute.
6 years? Can't count.
6 years.
So,
but it was like, when it was like one of the first big series on Netflix that everybody was watching at the same time, except for Julia.
But she had it. So you'll remember, if you watched Making a Murderer, a guy named Stephen Avery, mm-hmm. whose murder trial was detailed in the Netflix series. And he, of course, spoiler alert, I mean, it's been 6 years. He went to jail, right? He's in jail. Yep. And after the documentary, attempts to get him out of jail have continued because some maintain that he's innocent, including but not limited to Stephen Avery himself. Well, his attorneys update. His attorneys say, wait a minute. We have shocking new eyewitness testimony that links somebody other than Stephen Avery to the case of the murder.
Get out.
Of Teresa Halbach. Dun, dun, dun. Would you like to know what
yes,
that is?
Please. Thank you.
Okay. So, and when I first read this, I have to tell you, I had to read it like 3 times to understand what I was reading because I was like trying to remember all of the parts and the pieces and the moving things. So I'm going to say these words to you and then we'll back up and explain. Okay. Apparently, a new witness's testimony links Avery's nephew, Bobby Dassey, to the case. Mm-hmm. Avery and his other nephew, Brendan Dassey, are mm-hmm. currently serving life sentences after being found guilty of Teresa Halbach's murder in October of 2005. They both have maintained that they're innocent, but in a new motion that was filed in court this week, his attorney, Stephen Avery's attorneys, claim that a newspaper delivery driver named Thomas Sawinski, says he saw Bobby and an unidentified older man suspiciously pushing a blue Toyota Mm-mm. RAV4 toward the family's salvage yard in the early morning of November 5th, 2005, right after Teresa Halbach's disappearance. Now, do you want to explain why that's shocking?
Because the car that Teresa Halbach drove was a blue RAV4. And am I getting at the right thing?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
are many things you can get at.
Anything that had to do with that car being moved into their salvage yard, where it was eventually found way at the back, if I remember correctly, after she had gone missing. Anybody who was dealing with that car would be an important piece of the puzzle.
Yeah. And
also, but here's my, oh, sorry, go on.
No. What's your,
why did it take this long?
That's a good question. So you're having all the right questions.
Okay, good.
I too had that question. And I'm sure a lot of our listeners are having that question as they hear this story. Let me just read to you the words from the attorneys about Mr. Sawinski and what he's saying. Quote, after Mr. Sawinski, that's the guy who says he saw something, the newspaper guy, he drove by, he drove by Bobby and the other individual and delivered newspapers, because that's his job, mm-hmm. to the Stephen Avery or to the Avery family mailbox. He turned around and drove back to the exit. When he reached the RAV4, Bobby attempted to step in front of his car to block him from leaving his property. So basically trying to like intimidate him. And he also points out at one point that he gave him this like creepy stare.
Hmm.
Let's see. It says Bobby Dassey looked me in the eye and I could tell he was not happy to see me there. So just go with me. What they're implying is that Bobby Dassey was hiding the dead lady's car.
Mm-hmm.
And as this guy tootles along, a witness, obviously he's not going to be happy to see them.
Mm-hmm.
She says, the attorney says, Bobby Dassey looked me in the eye and I could tell he wasn't happy to see me there. I knew that Bobby and the older individual were doing something creepy.
Mm.
So it sounds like, to answer your question, he was afraid for his safety.
And that's why he did not say a thing.
Yes. What I am unclear about, and I apologize because I don't know if it's really that clear, is whether they knew his story at the time, because the way I read it, he had actually told the sheriff's office right away, like, I saw this weird thing.
Yeah.
And they were like, yeah, we already know who did this, so you're fine. Go about your business. So they just never followed up with him at the time.
Right.
It's not like he was just sitting around going,
I'm never going to tell anybody.
I think I remember this other guy. But again, for those of you who maybe haven't followed the whole story, what this is saying is you've got Stephen Avery and his nephew in jail for life.
Mm-hmm.
Because they think they were convicted of killing this woman. However, this guy is like, no, actually, it was one guy's brother and the other guy's nephew,
mm-hmm.
Who was with some old dude, who, by the way, is unidentified. And that's like a big what? Who was
that person? Yeah, that's a question mark.
They were the ones responsible for hiding the deathmobile. And that doesn't mean that they killed her, but it does mean that there are more questions than answers. And potentially that could put, I would imagine that's what his attorneys are arguing, his conviction in doubt.
And what's really interesting about Making a Murderer, if you are the one person who has not watched it yet, is that it's not just about this murder. It's also about the corruption in the justice system and in this area. Where is this again? Where did it take place?
Manitowoc.
Yeah, Manitowoc County. And so it is not necessarily surprising to those of us who have seen Making a Murderer that there is a story that goes as such, that somebody reported something that they saw and that the police officer said, no, don't worry about it. We already know who did it.
Yeah.
Because that is very much part of how the story is told in Making a Murderer, that they had fingered Brendan Dassey and Stephen Avery very early on,
mm-hmm.
and they were kind of retrofitting the whole case to make it seem like they had done it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So again, who knows what will happen in this particular following this filing, but at least this is like the first time. And what's interesting is then you go back and what you might not remember is that Bobby Dassey, who this guy is accusing of like creepily, like trying to get rid of the car, Bobby Dassey, testified against his uncle
mm-hmm.
and brother. I'm not sure about his brother, but I'm pretty sure he testified against Stephen Avery at the time, which like you can just see that train coming from a mile away, mm-hmm. right? Like, well, of course he would do that because
right. he needed to cover his tracks.
If he were guilty.
Right. Oh, this will be interesting. We will continue to follow that. Unfortunately, there won't be another season of Making a Murderer that we know of. Maybe someday they will. When we come back on the Colleen and Bradley Show, what is the food you always have a stash of? 651-641-1071.